Good to be with you this afternoon, and Lydia and I certainly feel young at heart. I don't know if we look very young anymore, but we feel young at heart, and it's our pleasure to get to come with you and be with you today and tell you our story. And our story is pretty simple, and they asked us to share it with you. But then as I got here and I looked across the room, I see so many of you that could tell your story, and it would be much better than our story, because as I see across the room, there's many of you who have started from scratch or are first-generation cattle producers. And so I'm a bit humbled by talking to you, but let's make this as informal as we can. As we go along, well, if there's a question, just jump up and down, and we'll try to clear it up, and we're going to be around the next couple of days, and maybe there'll be questions for afterwards. But how many of you work with family now? How many of you work with your spouses? All right. How many of you have ever planned to talk on, we lived across the river and it was a 2.5 hour drive, and your wife was kind of showing you the slides as you went down the road, and she was telling you which parts you were going to do, and she was picking the parts she wanted to do.
This is not true.
And this is a tag team thing. So Lydia and I think we make a fairly good team at lots of things we do, but I'm not sure we'll make a very good team at this, but we'll see how it goes. We're going to try to tag team this deal. And Lydia said for me to start it off. I'm Kevin and Lydia Yon. We're from Ridge Spring, South Carolina. Look, she already gave me a clicker that didn't work.
Maybe you point at the computer.
Oh, that'd be a good thing to turn it on, wouldn't it? I'm not the most technological fellow at our place. All right. We're from Yon Family Farms. Yon Family Farm is in Ridge Spring, South Carolina. Ridge Spring is in Saluda County, and it's just about 120 miles south and east of here, just across the Savannah River, on the ridge section of South Carolina, which lies between Augusta, Georgia, and Columbia, South Carolina. As Jacob said, we are a first-generational cattle operation, and we're going to tell you our story. And on the farm today is, of course, Lydia and I and our three children, Drake, Sally, and Corbin. Our farm over the years has grown. We run today on about 3,800 leased and known acres today, and we run about 1,500 brood cows. We're, most of us should be in the Southeast, we pride ourselves on being grass farmers, and we just happen to use beef cattle to harvest our grass. We've over the years, we've had 28 sales. We do it each third Saturday of February, and we also, we've had 14 fall sales, which we do the last Saturday in October of each year. We do those by auction and sell both bulls and females in those sales. We do the video auction through DV Auction and also just went on RFD and through Superior Auctions. Sell about, bulls are our business. That's how we make our living. Is from selling bulls to commercial producers. Most of those producers are in the 300-mile radius of us, and most of our bulls stay in the Southeast. We're primarily Angus producers, but over the last several years, we've also added semi-Angus and Ultra Black. We also sell females through our auctions, selling 150 to 200 females annually. We feed some cattle and have for the past 22 years, and we work with Sam Hands out at Triangle H in Garden City, Kansas, sending 2 or 3 loads each year, some of our own cattle as well as some of our customers' cattle. And we've also, over the last several years, started feeding more of those fed cattle at home, both for a freezer beef trade as well as FPL Foods in Augusta, Georgia, which is only 45 miles from us, who has become a certified Angus beef licensed packer. That's our crew, and our crew is pretty diverse. One time somebody looked at it and said, well, it looks like the United Nations, and at our place you don't have to have any prerequisite other than a desire to learn and a passion to work. And of our crew, 6 of those are immediate family members. Okay, Lydia.
All right, so how did we get to that point? Believe it or not, it all started at a little school about an hour from here across the state line. Some of you might have heard of them. this football season, if not ever before. But I can't pass up the opportunity. But we loved Clemson even before they were good at football. And our family is full of alums, and now our children have all graduated from Clemson as well. But that's where it kind of all began. I started at Clemson in animal science. Kevin was a year behind me and started in ag engineering. Back in the 80s, wasn't the best time to think you were going to go into production agriculture, so he thought he'd go into engineering. After physics and a few other classes, he decided his heart wasn't really in that and moved to the animal science department. Well, despite us being, strangely enough, from the same home county, we didn't know each other until he came to the animal science department at Clemson. So we met at a block and bridle cookout. And landed our first job, strangely enough also, through the extension horse specialist. We were both cattle people, and we weren't really sure what we wanted to do when we got out of school, but the extension horse specialist had a connection with a guy that had a bunch of different business interests who had donated horses to the university, and he had some Angus cattle, and he said he wanted to do a little bit better job with that and expand that part of his operation. So the extension horse specialist goes, "Hey, I know just the guy for you." So we went and interviewed, and as luck would have it and good fortune would have it, he said, "I'm going to hire you both." So that was at Congaree Farms, and that's in Eastover, South Carolina, which is in Richland County, which is where our state capital is located. We were there for 7 great years, starting in 1989. Fresh out of school, we had the bull by the horns, and we were pretty excited. There were about 30 Angus cows there when we got there to Congaree Farms. And he had had somebody kind of tending to him, but really somebody that didn't know a whole lot about genetics and wasn't really too gung-ho about Angus. So we were fresh and energetic. And the first thing that we talked to the owner about, and he's there on the farm, but he was not hands-on with the cattle. He would drive through in the afternoons and check on us, see what we were doing. But he wasn't a day-to-day kind of person involved on the farm. So we would go in his office and have periodic meetings with him and tell him our plans and tell him how we plan to make him money and whatnot. And he had started out with a bit of what we consider to be an albatross around our neck when we got there. Most of you in this room are too young to remember, but there was a bull named Northcote Casanova who was, Lori Fink might remember him from way back when. But anyway, he was a really tall bull that was real structurally incorrect. And this gentleman had paid a lot of money for him. So that was our first challenge, was to kind of go, how are we going to tell him he shouldn't have done that? But anyway, we worked through that, and he agreed to help purchase the Parties Over Angus herd from Colbert, Georgia. That was a really well-established herd. Most of you have probably heard of Dr. Dan and Randy and Beth Daniel. That was the key to our success, we think, because we started with the right genetics. That herd of cattle had been developed for years and years with performance in mind and in a southeastern environment. So the cattle were great, and they were going to work, and we knew that. Randy and Beth were at a point that they wanted to relieve themselves of some debt, and they knew us, and we thought it was a good fit. So I think they had 4 donor cows left, and we took the bulk of their brood cows. The great thing about this was that the gentleman that owned the farm we worked at had a lot of resources, so he was able to purchase those cows, which Kevin and I could have never done. So with that herd to start with, and he had some pretty decent cows just by happenstance that he had started with some Canadian bloodlines that we incorporated into the Parties Over herd and worked through those. And we started our first bull sale in 1990, and it was an open house, and Kevin served as the auctioneer, and people raised their hands until they were done bidding, and they'd put them down. So it was a real exciting event, as you can imagine, but it's how we got our start. The other thing that we did there was really get involved. We didn't have any kids, of course, when we first got married, so we got involved in Angus Association on the state level, got involved in Cattlemen's Association on the local and state level. We joined NCBA. Kevin started coming to BIF meetings. We became 4-H leaders. We did everything that was available in our area and really became entrenched in the community as well. We were living the dream. The great thing about it was that we started having children in 1990 and the couple that we worked for. So that's not a problem. You can take them to work with you. So we got to bring them to the farm with us. I had the office there at the house. So I never had to stop receiving my salary when I started having children. It was almost like we were part of their family for 7 years. And this is the little shack we lived in to start with. So like I said, we were kind of living the dream. We moved straight out of college into this house, had a vehicle, we both had a salary, and we really didn't have a whole lot of living expense. So we saved quite a bit of money during those 7 years. This is a picture of our first bull sale, so you kind of get the idea of what an exciting event it was and how low-key it was. I think that was everyone in attendance right there in that photo. But anyway, we were clicking along. Everything was great. 200 cows later and three children under the age of five in 1996, everything changed. We had a customer base. We had built the cow herd up. We were clicking along, and we got called into the office one day. And the gentleman that we worked for said, you know, I'm getting on up in age. I've got a lot of different businesses, and it's time for me to relieve myself of some of my business interests. And, well, this was December. He said, I think in June I'd like for y'all and the cattle to all be gone. So figure out how to do that. So that was our Merry Christmas present that year. And we kind of were like, what are we going to do now? Because we had no idea this was coming, and we had no plans to leave that operation. We really thought we were family, but obviously we were not. So Kevin started interviewing for jobs, and we talked about what we should do, and we were like, well, I can't go get a job. I got three kids. We'll never be able to pay for daycare. And so we were just sort of not sure what to do. And one Sunday afternoon, Kevin said, I want to take you to a little town called Ridge Spring, where we've sold some bulls. He said, you've never gotten to go with me when I delivered bulls there, and I want you to see it. So I said, all right, let's go. So we piled up the kids, rode to Ridge Spring. And our middle son, Drake, was with us, and he, we had ridden around all day, and I thought, man, this is the coolest place I have ever been. Everything was agriculture. There wasn't a stoplight in town. It was a cute little town. You see a picture there of Main Street. We looked for real estate signs on every pasture we went by, and there was nothing. Nobody sells land in Ridge Spring. So I thought we had pretty much had a nice field trip and wasted the day. Middle child says, I got to go to the bathroom. I can't go all the way back to Columbia without going to the bathroom. Mean daddy says, he's just wanting a candy bar and a Pepsi. We're not stopping at the convenience store. And I said, what if he really does have to go? Then what are we going to do? So we pull into the one convenience store in Ridge Spring, and Drake and I go inside. We come back out, and Kevin's talking to a guy at a pickup truck that I didn't know, and I just got back in our car, and he got back in about 5 minutes later, and he said, you're not going to believe what just happened. And I said, what? And he said, that was Rod Watson. He's a bull customer of ours. He said, he just walked over to me and said, what are you doing here? And he said, I said, oh, we're just out for Sunday afternoon ride. And he said, well, you know, that's so odd. My brother and I were just talking about y'all the other day. He said, I know y'all are happy where you are. But if you ever got to thinking you wanted to leave, we think y'all would fit in really good here. And we might sell you a little land because we've got more than we need. And so after I got off the floor of the car, Kevin went back the next day, and we decided we were moving to Ridge Spring. Ridge Spring was not home to us. That was not where our family was from. Our family was about 120 miles north of there, and we really didn't want to necessarily go back to where we came from. We toyed with the idea. We weren't necessarily invited to come back to where we came from either. But we didn't really feel like that was the place we needed to be. Ridge Spring kind of seemed to us like the land of opportunity because there was so much ag there, which is unusual these days because there's so much urban encroachment. So it wasn't home to us, but it was soon to become home because there's such a great ag infrastructure there, and we thought, you know, this is just great. We're going to make this work. Well, we didn't know how we were going to make it work, but we were pretty sure we were. So I mentioned that we were involved in all these ag organizations, and one of those was the Farm Bureau Young Farmer Group. And we were at a conference right before we got ready to move, and there was a lady there interviewing some of the young farmers at the conference. And I happened to be standing next to a gentleman who was a row crop farmer that was our exact same age and had kids the same age as ours. And this was his quote to the girl that was talking to him, because I was next in line to get interviewed, and he said, the only way you can get into ag is if you're born in it. It would be impossible for somebody to start a farm and be successful. And I went, oh, turned around and said, Kevin, we might be in trouble. Do you hear what Thomas just told her? I said, we might be really messing up. So we could have said, everybody says we can't do this. It's impossible. We're not going to even try. But instead, we kind of put on our fighting suit of armor, as you see there. That's our son and his best friend growing up. And we kind of stuck to our guns, and Kevin can tell you how it went from there.
Obviously, we needed financing. Our bull customer sold us 100 acres. They had a little house. This was an abandoned peach orchard. There were a little bit permanent fencing on the place, so we could move our 100 cows. And I'm not sure if Lydia was going to cover that, but we headed off the dispersal from Congaree Farms. There were 200 cows. It was set for a June 1st dispersal. That would have been one of the most painful, agonizing things we would have ever had to do. A cow herd that we had worked with for 7 years, that Dr. Dan and Randy had worked with for a lifetime, to us had been a tragedy to let those cows scatter to the wind. But we were able to buy that a half of that herd of cattle. And also, had been earning some equity into that herd of cattle our 7 years, and which was turned out to be a good thing. We owned just a small percentage of those cows, and then we were able to buy the rest. The Watson boys sold us 100 acres. We had 100 cows. We had a wore-out pickup truck, and it was Lydia and I and those three youngins under the age of five. So we needed some financing. Luckily, the Watsons' owner financed the first 100 acres, which was very, very helpful. They believed in us enough that they owner financed it. And we'll be grateful to that family for as long as we live for them believing in us. But we didn't have any operating cash. We had 100 cows. They had to eat. We didn't have any equipment. So quickly we had to come up with capital. And we quickly learned how little we knew about business. We had both been animal science majors. We had all the production stuff we thought down pat. Most of that is obsolete now, or it's changed. But we thought we knew it all. But we knew very little about business. So my suggestion often to young people is go learn business. The production stuff is easy. It'll come to you, so go learn business. We still don't know a lot about it, but we've had to learn it the hard way. So finances, where you don't go for capital. We went to the Farm Service Agency, a part of USDA. Even today, they have beginner farmer programs. They're not young farmer programs. They can be for any age person that's starting a new venture. It's beginner farmer programs. The government believed in us enough to loan us some money for operating money. Over time, you graduate out of these programs, and we have kind of met our obligation, and they've kind of graduated us out. We still need capital. We still need financing. So we work with Farm Credit System and us also as commercial banks. Okay, you know, when you're starting a farm, very seldomly do you just get to start it and all of a sudden the checks are rolling in and you're self-sustaining. You know, oftentimes we got to figure out what else are we going to do. And Lydia's daddy was, when he's pretty conservative and he's a cattleman, but he was his question to both of us is, which one of you is going to go get a real job? And we never did. We never did get a real job. But there's many opportunities that of service type jobs you could have to the beef cattle industry that will help you further network and help you make connections, because this business really is more about people than it is anything else. It's about making those connections. And some of the things that come to mind even now that I think if a young person or a beginning farmer was starting, that they could, you know, if they wanted to be an AI technician and help folks synchronize an AI cows or maybe even sell semen for one of the studs, if you wanted to build fence, if you wanted to, in this part of the world, if you wanted to own a hay wrapper, or if you wanted to just clip cattle, there's just a lot of complementary jobs that will help you network that might put food on the table while you're starting your operation. For us, it was the Watson family that sold us the 100 acres. They were big farmers, and they also had commercial cows. And when we moved there, we began managing their commercial cows. We supplied their labor for their cattle and their hay operation. We didn't have any equipment, but they did. So we were able to trade our labor for their equipment. Not only did they let us use their equipment for our labor, but they let us use one of the best set of commercial cows I've ever seen, and we were able to put embryos in those cows. So we were able to grow our Angus herd through their cows.
All right, so obviously you might remember the picture of our little shack we started with. Well, this was my next home. So the 100 acres had a house on it, and this was the house. And Kevin's already told you my dad thought one of us needed to get a job. The other thing my dad said the same day that we showed him our new town and our new home was, Kevin, I'm not sure she's going to live there. And I'm not a materialistic kind of person at all, but it was a little bit of a struggle for me to move from where I had become accustomed to living for 7 years to this. And so really it was not possible for us to move just straight into it with our three kids. I believe social services might have come and taken them the condition that it was in. So instead, for the next 6 months before we finally did move in June, this is what we did every weekend, because we were still employed by the farm up until June. So every weekend, we would load our kids up, and we'd have a camp out in Ridge Spring and caulk walls and paint and clean out junk, clean out pecans under the bathtub where the squirrels had lived. And anyway, the kids thought it was the greatest thing ever. And it was really some of the best times of our life looking back. We would cook hot dogs in the yard. And anyway, everybody in town in Ridge Spring, though, thought that we were the craziest things they had ever seen. Literally, they were the older generation in town. And like I said, land didn't change hands there much, so everybody that's there had lived there forever. And here come these new people with three kids, and they would literally drive by the road in front of that house and just stop in the highway and stare at us. And like, because I remember a friend of mine from Columbia came one day to paint, and she had three kids also, same age as ours, and all six of our kids were in the yard with sheets on their heads running around the yard while we were inside painting. And I remember an older lady stopping and bringing a pie by, and I thought, oh my gosh, you know, this is probably not the best thing, because I know she got right on the phone and said, you won't believe that woman and those children what they were doing. But anyway, it was fun, and we got there, and 6 months later, this is what it looked like. So we were pretty pleased with what we managed to accomplish, and we moved in, and there was still work to be done after we did move in, and this was what we thought was going to be our temporary home, right? So 16 years later, we were still living in that same little house. It had one bathroom. There were five of us. And when it first started out, the kids were little. The five of us fit in there pretty nicely. But 16 years later, when they were big and starting to go to college, we were kind of cramped and crowded. But, you know, it was really not such a bad thing at all. We could have spent money towards our personal lives and our housing or, you know, buying a boat or whatever, but every time we had a little bit of extra money, you know what we did. We would build a commodity shed or buy a chute or something like that. And so we'd always joke and go buy the commodity shed, and I'd show the boys, our two boys shared a bedroom, and one of them sort of snores and is loud, and the other one spent his whole time living there fussing every morning when he'd get up that he didn't get any sleep because Corbin snored all night. So I would show him the commodity shed and say, which one of these rooms do you want for your bedroom? Because this is your choice. You can either move in here or, you know, stay with Corbin. So we didn't do without anything that we needed, but we didn't have any extras. But everything we had, we poured into making the farm better. And we didn't really think of it as a sacrifice. But Kevin mentioned that we worked together. Well, not everybody can work with their spouse, and there's a lot of days that I question the sanity of us trying to do that. But the other thing is, a lot of folks, both spouses aren't in love with agriculture. So I would have to say this wouldn't have worked for everybody, because there's a lot of my friends that would have never lived in this house or done what we did. And that's something you need to be aware of. Just because it's your dream, it might not be your spouse's dream. So that's something you need to clearly define before you embark on something of this magnitude, because it really is a big commitment. That's something you both got to be passionate about if you do it to the degree that we did. But it could be worked out the other way, but you just got to know that you're not going to eat supper at 6 every night, and, you know, y'all all do what we do too, so I don't have to explain it to you, but it is definitely something you need to consider.
All right, and Lydia brings up a good point, and any chance I get, it's usually talking to groups that look a little longer this, and if this is your dream and this is your passion, be pretty careful about the spouse that you choose. And I would never say that it's impossible to do it without a spouse that is fully supportive, but it would be very, very hard. And not to say that your spouse has to be involved as much as Lydia, or if you're the girl, as much as I, but they sure can't be hostile toward the idea. It would be very, very hard to overcome. So if that's a dream of yours, as Lydia says, be sure that your spouse at least has a, hopefully he or she will share that dream, but if they don't share that dream, hopefully they will be cooperative as you pursue that dream. I think anytime when you, whatever you have in mind, I think you got to think about where you're going to be when you get where you're going. I think you got to have a vision. And this is what we saw out our back door of that mansion that we lived in, an empty field. But we had a vision for it, and it sure didn't happen overnight. And I think many times we get impatient, we get just discouraged, because nothing we do in the beef cattle business is very fast, is it? It's all very slow. But with time, it can happen. That's our first barn being built, that same hillside. And now 20 years later, it's the headquarters of our operation, that same very barn. Again, Lydia's daddy said he came and he is a wonderful man. He's been very, very supportive, but he lived 80 miles away, and he'd come check in on us, and he said, why are you wasting money on two bathrooms? You don't need two bathrooms in this barn. Well, that's what he was saying, but in my mind, I was seeing us having a production sale every year. Now we have two production sales, and believe it or not, those bathrooms aren't big enough. So I think you got to have a vision in mind. Those are our three children when that barn was being built, and I think Lydia put that in there. I hope you can see some of their expressions on their faces. And they're back at the farm, and I could line all three of them up this morning. They might have looked very similar to that. Expressions, and might have traded expressions, but you know, every day ain't going to be real good. Every day is not going to be the easiest day we've ever had. And especially working with families or working with whoever you work with, it takes cooperation, and it takes a lot of patience, and we have to be forbearing with one another. We've learned a long time ago, and when we came to our first BIF, to listen to those that know more than we, that have been there. Usually they're a little older than we are, but not always. And we've had so many mentors in this business. There's Lori and Fink there in the back. She might not know it, but her and Galen was a mentor of ours. They did this very thing in Kansas. Alan, your grandfather, Ralph Bridges, was a mentor of ours. Randy and Beth Daniels, right here outside of Athens. Donald, your parents are mentors of ours. There's nothing, and we still have mentors. Your parents, Donald, are still my mentors. And I think in this business, there's so many people that are willing to help you. And they want to help you, and they want to succeed. There's no, I can think of no other enterprise in America where people are so free with information. And that's what this BIF meeting is all about. You know, if we get right down to it, some of us are competitors. But we come to these things, and we help each other, and we share information. So please, please utilize the people that are older and wiser than we are. You know, mentioning Dr. Dan 21 years ago, he gave some good advice. As we loaded up those cows and took from his house across the river to our house, he said, y'all go home and take care of these cows, and they'll take care of you. And that they've done. And I hope we've done a good job of taking care of them and taking care of the land. You know, we're stewards of what we've been given. And it can be a little or it can be a lot, but we're still stewards of it. And you know what? There's always people watching us. Never forget that. I remember as a young man, some of my friends would say, you're always too worried about what other people think. Or, you know, we were doing things we shouldn't be doing. Yes, I was worried about what other people thought, because they might tell my parents and my grandparents. But I do think we have to realize there's always people watching us, whether it's our family members, whether it's our employees, if we have employees, whether it's our customers, our neighbors, our peers. And I say that because when we moved to Ridgefield, people were watching us. Just as Lydia said, they thought we were the craziest things they'd ever saw. They were taking bets on how quick we'd go broke. they were very intrigued by us. And we're a bit odd. They still, lots of them still think we're pretty crazy. But they were watching us. And let me tell you what happened over time. Some of these farmers in the area that didn't have family members coming back to their operation, they were getting older. They still loved the area. They still loved their homes. They still loved their farms, but they just wasn't healthy enough to keep doing it, or maybe they were just tired. But guess what? They wanted to slow up. So the story would go like this. You think if I rented you my place, you would take as good a care of it as you do your place? It'd look as nice? We'd say, yes, sir, yes, ma'am, we'll try. You think if I sold you my herd of cows, most of these were commercial herds, you could pay me over a little time? I hate paying taxes. We'd say, yes, sir, we think we can do that. Do you think I could help you on pretty days when I wanted to? Yes, sir, we can find something for you to do. That's the way it went. And one after another, Lydia and I counted up on the way over here, there were six of those farms within 5-mile radius of us. Didn't happen that first year. One did happen after the first year. But over time, it's happened. And I promise you, in your area, there might not be six of them. There might be others like that. And don't just expect them to knock down your door as soon as you put up a sign saying you're going into business. They want to watch you a while. And they want to see what you do. And a lot of these little small communities across rural America, they love their community. They love their church. They love their community. And many people are seeing their towns and their communities dry up. Some of these people, their children went off to other places. And it saddens these older people to see their communities, their towns, their farms go to nothing. So if they see somebody that has come in and is trying to improve the whole community, that is maybe 4-H club volunteers, maybe little league coaches, maybe volunteer firemen, PTA, you name it, more than often they're going to want to help you because you're going to help their family and you're going to help their community. So it's very important. So that's how we were, a lot of expansions we've done is just through lease farms, just like this one. It helped us a lot because a lot of these farms were already established. Some of these farms had been raising cattle for 30 years. They had working pens. They had barns. We didn't. We didn't have anything. We were having to build it. So it gave us a place to get a toehold. There are some advantages from starting from new, and I've also learned that by renting some of these farms. When you start new, you kind of can know how you want it, and you can kind of build it the way you want it. If it's right, you can take the credit for it. If it's wrong, it's on you as well. You're not stuck with trying to make do with something that Daddy or Granddaddy or Uncle Bill had. You can kind of fix it the way that you think it should be done. On our place, we had these rented farms, and oftentimes what little land we owned, we were neglecting. This isn't real easy to see, but this was a working pen on land that we owned. It's a wonder if we made it through marriage, and it's a wonder if our kids didn't drown in that hole or getting that alligator bit, but this is where we AI'd cows. And I think lots of times we were penny wise and pound foolish. We were straining out a gnat and swallowing a camel. We just didn't have the money to spend the money or to do a facility. But with time, we were able to change that mud hole to a facility like that.
And we should have done that a long time ago. It was one of those situations where that facility could have been financed and we could have made payments on it. And like Kevin said, it would have saved us a lot of money in the long haul. So don't always put off doing something. The other joke at our house is about equipment. I get lots of pieces of equipment for birthdays, anniversaries, Christmas, and whatnot. Sometimes unbeknownst to me as a surprise, and other times I will have a little bit of clue that it's coming, but that's something that Kevin learned. A lot of y'all know Donnie Schiefelbein. He uses Donnie as somebody that promotes that you should trade your equipment in before it loses completely all of its value and replace it with better equipment, and I know that that does make good business sense, and I follow that philosophy, but your equipment and your facilities are things that you've really got to have. You don't want to spend money on stuff like that that costs that much, but I have over time come to learn that you do have to borrow money, and a lot of times it has to be big loans, and that's another thing. We picked on my daddy a whole lot during this talk, but he has some really good thoughts, but one thing that he does not like to do is owe somebody money. So when we started borrowing all this money, I was not accustomed to having a lot of loans, and I've become real accustomed to it now. But that was something that I had to change that mindset, because that wasn't the way I was brought up. And there's nothing wrong with either way. It's just what circumstances you find yourself in, what you can do. As our farm was growing and improving, our children were growing up with the farm. So this talk is supposed to be about starting from scratch, but now that our kids are all grown, I'm going to try to roll it into where we are today a little bit now that they're all back. And they're probably the same age as a whole lot of the folks I see sitting out there. And a lot of you have probably grown up very similar to them. Some of you may not have. I don't think we brought it up, but Kevin did not grow up on a farm. His parents did not have cow number one. He grew up, his mom taught school, and his dad worked in the textile industry. But for some reason, he had this crazy dream that he wanted to be a farmer ever since he saw his first tractor. So he worked for other farmers growing up and got his experience at the School of Hard Knocks, basically. And doors have just opened because he did work hard and took the initiative to get experience that he wasn't born into. Our kids were fortunate that they probably had more opportunities growing up than I did. And I did grow up on a farm. We just did everything kind of together as a family. And let me also say, this is kind of unusual that we have three kids and all three of them have grown up in agriculture and they all still love it today. We never pressured them to say, you have to show cows or you have to be in 4-H. If somebody wanted to do dance and cheerleading, well, that's what we would have done. But none of our kids ever really, they tried all of that stuff, but they would always come back to 4-H or showing cows or showing livestock or riding horses or something like that. So I don't really know that that's anything we did. It's just maybe it was in their genetics. I don't know. But we showed cows, and their dad had the great idea that they needed to learn to manage money and have their own businesses. So they sold eggs in 4-H. And then he planted a little sweet corn patch. And you can see that corn, how far back it goes. Our kids thought we were using them for child labor and slave labor, and it's terrible, but we would have family time, and that's an intern from Wyoming on the far right. We didn't just limit the fund to our family. We had local friends of theirs from school that would come for summer jobs, and that kid from Wyoming spent the summer. And if you've ever pulled sweet corn in the morning in a wet cornfield, you'll notice why our kids have on rain pants, and it's probably about 90 degrees and humid in South Carolina on a day like that. So we had some great family bonding time. But the whole point of doing that was not to make them pull sweet corn every day. It was to teach them that you have to earn your money. And so they did that. They built fence from word go. So they grew up with the farm, and they know it as well as we do because they were there when it started. So they feel a lot of ownership in it. Another thing I'll mention is that no conversation was really ever off limits with our kids. They heard us talk about borrowing money, and they heard us talk about paying bills ever since they were little. So they've always known that none of it was just a free, fun place to live. We got worn-out horses for them, and they played with them. We don't use the horses to do the cattle. We use four-wheelers, and this is just a picture of Drake as he was a teenager turning out cows on grass one day. So this was kind of a training ground for them. We figured whether they wanted to become doctors or rocket science or whatever they wanted to go into, we looked at it like being raised on a farm was going to teach them how to think on their feet and be responsible and have a strong work ethic, as y'all are all familiar with. So they graduated high school, and the one thing that we required all of them to do was to stay gone for 4 years, and college could count, but you couldn't just come home and loaf during the summer. And of course, they didn't really want to come home because they knew that it would be worse at home than anywhere else they might go. So they all had internships, and as you can see, those are not Angus in that picture. Drake broadened his horizons, and he spent a summer at Sitz Angus Ranch in Montana, and he decided when it snowed on Memorial Day, and he was from South Carolina, that he did not want to go back to that area of the country again, so he did an internship in Florida the following summer at Kempfer Ranch. He also, in between there, went to Sam Hands at Triangle H to the feed yard in Garden City, Kansas. So those internships were really valuable to him, not just because he got to do something totally different than what we did at home, but because those three are all family operations, that he got to see how other families operated, how they got along, how they handled conflict, and they shared and were very transparent with him about how they did things, which was very much appreciated. It wasn't that he was there to steal ideas, but just to see a different way. Corbin, our youngest son, he likes cows, but he doesn't love cows like the rest of our family does. So he went and spent the summer with Becky Mills' family at the Lovett Farms in South Georgia. They have commercial cows and a row crop farm, and the boy loves a tractor, and we were lucky that we got to get him to come back home because he was ready to go move in with the Lovetts long term after he spent the summer riding a tractor. He went there. He also went to another row crop farm who happened to be a bull customer of ours that grew cotton and other row crops in eastern South Carolina. And then one summer he worked on a potato farm, digging potatoes with a Hispanic labor crew. And that was really eye-opening for him, but he enjoyed it. It was a different experience. Sally, our oldest daughter, worked at CAB one summer. She had an extension internship. She worked in the poultry industry as a breeder service intern. And I think she worked on one of the large peach packing operations one summer. So anyway, they got a lot of different experiences, and most of them were on family farms. So they brought back a lot to the table because we'd always pick their brain and say, well, what time do you have to start? Or how did they handle their people being off on the weekend? So it was a real learning experience for our whole family when they would come back home and share what they had learned. So in turn, we have always been open to interns coming. Pretty much, we all get aggravated with Kevin, but especially since he didn't grow up on a farm. If you can walk and talk and show up and say you want to learn about a cow, he'll let you work. That doesn't always last real long. As you know, a lot of today's youth maybe don't have quite what it takes to work in ag, but he'll let them try. And we'll all roll our eyes and go, we don't need another helper right now. But anyway, so he's real open to that idea, and we have hosted a lot of high school students, college interns, and even older folks that are retired and want to learn. We'll let them come spend the day with us and see what we do. And, you know, it's really valuable. We did internships in college, too, and found out what we did and didn't want to do as much as anything without having made a long-term commitment. Some of you might know that we just had some weddings in our family, so this is kind of our first weekend getting back into normality. Our son got married April 22nd, and our daughter got married May 20th. Both weddings were in our town, and both receptions were at our farm, so we've been kind of busy and been in wedding mode for the past 2 months. But I say that to say that expansion is not a bad thing at all. So we now have a daughter-in-law and a son-in-law. Son-in-law works on our farm. The daughter-in-law is from Maine, and she's a registered dietitian. So she brings back a whole new perspective to the farm. I also want to say that our kids they always knew that we were trying to be big enough that they could come back if they wanted to contribute and bring something new to the table and some new ideas, but it was never like, okay, you come on home and here's the golden throne for you to sit on. It's not been that way at all, and they can certainly attest to that because they don't get the cheesy jobs. The other thing that I've never thought of it this way, but Kevin's told you everybody thought we were crazy all along. Well, now we really are because we bought a place called the Nut House in Ridge Spring this October. The elderly gentleman in that picture with our three kids is our neighbor. He's 93, and he has been in the pecan business his entire life, which was started by his family. His two children live in town in Columbia, South Carolina, and don't want to have a thing to do with a pecan. So about a month before our fall sale, his daughter calls us and goes, Daddy fell, he cannot harvest his pecan crop, and he wants y'all to buy the farm. And we went, huh? So we had one of those infamous family meetings, and I was going through all the reasons why we could not do that, because we don't have any equipment, we don't know anything about pecans, and our youngest son says, well, we did a feasibility study on that in Ag Econ at Clemson. I actually did pecans as my project. I think we can make money doing that. And I said, you do? And he said, yeah, I think I'd like that. I think I could do that. So Corbin on the left is kind of the pecan guru of the family, and Drake and Kevin are his underlings, and Sally and her new sister-in-law are getting their feet wet at the Nut House doing some retail pecan business. So we spent yesterday with the ag economist trying to do a feasibility study, get a feasibility study started on how we can make more money with the Nut House. So I say that to say, as you get into this more, and as you kids get ready to come home, be innovative and think of things you can do so you don't have all your eggs in one basket. Because the more I thought about it, I was like, you know, this might not be a bad thing. The cattle market could be down. The pecans could be good. So obviously that's not a bad thing. We're getting close to the end. I know y'all are getting tired. And Kevin accuses me of talking too much, so I'm going to let him wind it up.
I think she's done great. As Lydia said, sometimes we get entrenched in what we did. And forever, Lydia and I have been Angus breeders. And the Angus breed has been very good to us. But being from South Carolina, you know, there's only how many Angus bulls can you sell in a given day or 2 days a year. So we had to be innovative. We told our children, if you want to come back, it's fine you come back, but the pie's got to be bigger. Mom and Daddy still need a piece of pie. So we have to think of other diversify and other enterprises that might allow us all to make a living, as well as those full-time employees that were there while the children were off at college. None of those didn't need to lose their job. They had been very loyal. So we've had our challenges to how to make the pie bigger, and how to keep the pot boiling, quite frankly. And for us, it's been, as Lydia mentioned, the pecan industry. And the bottom left is a grove of pecan trees with crimson clover on it, making its own nitrogen. Dr. Hancock would like that, wouldn't he, Stuart? For us, it's also, we're seed stock producers, and my Angus buddies give me a hard time, but we also make some semi-Angus bulls. We also make some ultra-black bulls. Not that we wanted a whole other set of records to keep up with and another association to deal with, but there were just only so many Angus bulls that we could sell in South Carolina on a given day. It helped expand our market. It helped meet our customer demand. Our customers asked us to do it, and we did it. So we were hopefully innovative and open-minded enough to do something different. We're also growing more of our own feedstuffs, our own crops. There's been years that's helped us immensely. Our boys are home today cutting oats and small grains that we'll turn around and plant for forages this fall. We will raise our own seed. And as the children have come back, Lydia mentioned that there's different interests. And our youngest son and Sally or others, you know, they might not have the exact same interest that Lydia and I are. The youngest son has an interest in farming. So if he can farm and help young family farms and we still be a cohesive family and a unit, then why not? You know, why force upon him something that he might be more comfortable if it will help the operation? So I encourage you to sometimes look outside the box, and there might be other ways to incorporate family members. Okay, I think that winds us up. It's been a pleasure to get to spend a few minutes with you and tell you our story. And I hope you got a little bit of good out of it. And Lydia and I will be around the next couple of days. And I don't know if there's time for questions now, but if there is, we'd be glad to try to answer them. Or if you just something you don't want to ask us in front of everybody, we'd grab us in the halls. But I hope that it's my desire that many of you have a passion for the beef industry. And I know that you do. You wouldn't be here if you didn't. And I hope you have a passion to fulfill your dreams. And everybody has a dream. And, you know, all of us have a story. It's just a good bit of it's up to us to write that story. So never think that you can't do it. Be just as bullheaded as you possibly can be. Lydia had a good picture. Be just as bullheaded as you possibly can be and have that passion. And through your passion and through your friends and through your family and through your faith, I think that you can fulfill any of your dreams that you would like. Thank you.